If only Nina Turner was with us tonight.
Yes, the hat.
If only Nina Turner would put on Jim Hightower's hat tonight. Brothers and sisters, I want to tell you something. I was having dinner with Nina Turner in Cleveland in 2015 with Ed Schultz, with Big Ed Schultz. And Nina Turner said to me, well, you know, I was thinking of going and doing this 2016 race the way that everybody expects me to do it. I've been a state legislator, a candidate, all these other things. I was kind of pondering that. But, you know, I've been getting this sense about this Bernie Sanders guy. I've been getting this sense that maybe we ought to just give something different a try this time. And Nina Turner basically got a lot of people mad at her, took a lot of risks. She stepped out of really what was the center of mainstream politics and said she wants to be a part of a political revolution. So ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to hand the mic over. Is that okay, Norm? I want to hand the mic over tonight to the person who I believe might be able to lead us out of the wilderness. Brothers and sisters, please welcome Sister Nina Turner.
Oh, my God. Wow. I'm going to have to take him on the road with me. He's not going to get away from me now. Man, didn't you guys enjoy that with Thomas and John? Totally. I was at the edge of my seat, just back there listening and really taking it all in. And this entire night has been absolutely fantastic. And in the absence of my dear friend, Jim Hightower, can we give him a big shout out, man? He is. And I hope somebody is capturing this because I want him to know that a sister got the hat on. Wow, just the tradition of the Fighting Bob Fest to be here tonight. I want to thank Norm and the Progressive Magazine and all the progressives who are here tonight, late night on a Friday here, just taking it all in. But it is really always good for the family to get together to renew our strength because we have a big fight ahead of us. But I want you to know that we're gonna win this thing. We will. And I don't know where Sarah is in the audience, but she picked me up from the airport and just in that little bit of time to educate me about why the Bob Fest is so important. And for the Honorable Bob, Senator Bob, and Belle, she said, don't you forget his wife, Belle, because she was the woman beside the man making it happen. And I'm going to give Belle, Sister Belle, a shout out, too. But we were driving down, and I was taking copious notes. We were driving down Packer Avenue, Crossroad is commercial. Did I get that right? And she pointed to the Oscar Mayer plant, and she said, you know, that plant had been there for 100 years, and that it just closed a few months ago. And she began to explain to me that farm families in particular, that they were the farmers, the National Farmers Union was in D.C. lobbying elected officials, and primarily it was Republican elected officials who were absolutely stunned that they would be there to talk about health care. And how those elected officials basically said, we can't really believe that you're here to talk about health care. We thought you wanted to talk about the farm bill. And she said, yes, that's important too. But do you know that the family farmer does not have good health care benefits? And how important that is to their bottom line as small business owners to be able to keep that farm going and the impact generationally that that will have if we do not create a Medicare for all system in the United States of America. She also explained to me how important it is, you know, and I'm just really taking it in because some elected officials, and not all, but I want you to hear me. I want you to feel what I'm saying today. People are not born Democrat or Republican. We are born human beings who have the capacity to love, to grow, to do great things. On the other side of the spectrum, though, as human beings, we have the capacity to be evil, to be wrong, to malign. But I want to speak to the greater strength of our nature, that we cannot allow elected officials for political gain to divide us based on Democrat, Republican, rural, urban, suburban, young, seasoned, black, white, Hispanic, Native American, Asian, gay, straight, lesbian. We are one in this mosaic of humanity. And we really do need elected officials who understand that. And the beauty about the Honorable Bob, as Sarah was explaining to me, is that in the early 1900s, he's fighting big moneyed interests for the everyday woman and man and child in this country as a Republican. Back when, you know, it meant a whole different thing, Norm, to be a Republican. But just even listening to that story just reminded me that we should judge people in the way that Dr. King said, by the content of their character, and not just simply tear people down just because of one party affiliation or the other. What we need in America right now is conscious-minded folks from all walks of life, from all political spectrums, who are willing to stand up against big money interests in the Republican and the Democratic Party. Period. So we need some conscious-minded folks. So as the president of our revolution, I am honored to be here. Again, the progressives, I got to give a shout out to Our Revolution Wisconsin. Man, but again, just to listen to every speaker that you had tonight, I know it's getting late, so I'm not going to keep you much longer. But everybody had something to add, whether it was the sister that was talking about immigration reform, talking about DACA, and how important it is for us, people who believe in humanity. And isn't it strange that we have to qualify minorities? People of color have to have a qualification for their humanity to be recognized, when folks should be recognized just because they're human beings, just because they are people, and there is an intrinsic value in that. And it shouldn't matter whether they're taxpaying or they go to college, or you got to give them some fancy title just to say that the DACA, the Dreamers, this is their country, period. And as the United States of America, we need to deal with immigration reform. We should have done that two or three administrations ago. This is not just about right now. It is about the failure of elected officials administrations ago to deal with this. As a nation, we must deal with this, and deal with this in a humane way. Think about whether or not those are your relatives. Put yourself in their shoes. And can I say something, sisters and brothers in Wisconsin? This is not just, it can't just be black folks and brown folks fighting for racial justice in this country. We need our white sisters and brothers to stand up. And just one other thing on that, racism didn't start with Mr. Trump. Can I just say that? And too many of the folks in the elected ministry, as I like to call it, because I believe that people who serve in elected office, that it is a ministry, and that they ought to care about the people who they are serving and stop whispering sweet nothings in our ear when it's time for them to run for office. So for any elected official who just want to pretend that racism just started with Mr. Trump, they are absolutely wrong. Now, has he brought out an element in this country that was kind of underground? Absolutely. But we must confess our sins in this country, that racism and sexism and all the isms was already here before he got there. We have to have truth and reconciliation in this country, and let's deal with these things so that we can overcome them, so that by the next generation, we are not having these same conversations. But it is very easy just to point the finger at Mr. Trump, who does have a responsibility as the president of the United States to bring people together, to speak truth to power, to call out racism and bigotry. But it didn't just start with him. But we have an obligation to do something about it. All of us have a responsibility to do something about it. And as I've traveled this country, and when John told that story, I remember the exact restaurant we were at. My husband was there. It was 2015, and I was having this moment, you know, my head and my heart. And my heart told me to go with Senator Bernie Sanders. And that's what I did. And I would do it all over again. Despite all the hell that I've caught, that I'm still catching, that my family is catching, I would do it all over again, because it is better to stand and do what you believe is right. So progressives, we got a fight on our hands, but ultimately we are going to win this fight. It's going to take some time, but we're going to win this fight. We're already making strides. Now, just earlier this week, we got the senator from Vermont standing up with 15 of his other, or he got 15, 16 co-sponsors on his Medicare for All bill. Man, do you guys remember when he first introduced that bill? He had zero co-sponsors. Now he has 16, and it is growing. And that is an example of how we must persevere, that when you are standing up for what is right, when you are standing for everyday people, that it might seem lonely, it might seem impossible. You know, I'm feeling a little President Nelson Mandela, and one of my favorite quotes of his, he said, it always seems impossible until it is done. And that is the moment we are in right now, that it always seems impossible until it is done. And I can't forget about Congressman John Conyers in the House of Representatives, who introduced his bill as well over there. We getting this thing done. And we need to make folks uncomfortable, who especially navigate the halls of power, who have the best healthcare plans that our tax dollars can buy, but yet they don't believe that you and you and you, they don't believe that we deserve the same. There's something wrong with that. And it just strikes me as strange is that these same elected officials act like our tax dollars is their money. If as a nation we decide from both a moral and economic perspective that Medicare for All is the right thing to do, then why can't we do that? Why can't we have that? We the people. So we're going to get there. We're going to make folks feel uncomfortable. They need to feel the heat, feel the burn all the way across the board on this, because it is morally the right thing to do. So it wasn't just a story that, you know, that Sarah shared with me, that when she went before the exchange happened, and I hope I'm not embarrassing Sarah, I mean, she educated me in that quick 10 minutes real quick. That when she went to go get health insurance for her family, this is before the exchange, that insurance companies wouldn't insure her family, her husband, because they said they were farmers. It's a risk. Every profession, every individual, every person in this country, our health is our wealth. And so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because we're paying for it one way or the other. Why don't we pay for it on the front end in a way that keeps people healthy and vibrant? That is the thing to do. So we're going to get there. And it's not just Medicare for All we need to make people feel uncomfortable. I'm just uncomfortable that in this country we spend $80 billion a year to house folks in prison, but we won't invest any of that on the front end for pre-K through 16 education, for trade schools. Because everybody's not going to go to college, but we need vocational education in this country as well. Let's pay for those kinds of things. How about paid family medical leave in this country? We need to make folks feel uncomfortable. And, you know, it just strikes me as strange, and I think that Thomas hit on this, that elected officials these days, and I just don't understand it, Bob Fest, sisters and brothers, how they just believe that you're supposed to give them your vote. You owe them your vote. The last time I checked, in America, folks run for office, and that means that they need to earn your vote every single election cycle. You don't owe anybody anything. If anything, they owe you. The power belongs to the people. We got this thing all backwards. And you can admire folks. Look, nobody is above critique. Nobody. Not even our beloved senator. Nobody is above critique. But as a college professor, you know, there's a thing called the midterm grade. And my students know the midterm grade, that I am going to assess where they are at that point in the semester. And one of two things can happen. Either during the midterm consultation, they understand how far they are from getting that grade that they want. So if they want an A and they have a C, they know what they got to do. If they have a C and they really don't care, then they know that C might turn into an F, but at least they know where they stand. What am I saying, Bob Fest, is that we ought to make sure that elected officials on all levels of government understand where they stand, give them that midterm grade so that it is no surprise when re-election time comes, whether they deserve, whether they have earned the right to be elected again. But they don't, I mean, just, and listen, I served in the Senate in the great state of Ohio, and I know what it feels like to be an incumbent and just feel like, wow, I'm doing the best job ever, and I don't want anybody to run against me. Well, I was doing the best job ever, but I get it. But it is called democracy, and people have a right to run. You have a right to be told how folks are going to stand up for you when they get there, instead of telling you one thing when they're running and doing another thing when they get elected. And we got to hold these folks accountable, whether they Democrat or Republican, period. Nobody gets a free pass. So that's where our people power comes in, because all great things in this country, every single one, there might be one name shining in the lights, but when you peel back the layers, those great things happen because everyday people put a little extra on their ordinary, and extraordinary things happen. And that is what Senator Bob knew. He understood that, and that is why he stood up for the everyday man, woman, and child in this country, and you all can carry on his legacy. Or what about people like Mother Jones? The same thing, standing up for coal miners and children. I remember I got several of her quotes that I love, but one in particular, when she was asking a man in this story, she asked him why he was in prison, what had he done, and I think he told her he stole a pair of shoes, and she said, well, had you stole a railroad, you'd be a U.S. senator. So, not much has changed. But it is the goodness and the value of that which we are fighting for. We are fighting for something bigger than ourselves. So if we can go to the moon, we can have Medicare for all. Yeah. Nothing's stopping us. And that is just the first step. I believe people need good wages in this country, period. So we will push and breathe. And I say that because rocky times are ahead. Just because the senator introduced that legislation, just because Representative Conyers introduced it in the House, the senator in the Senate, it's not gonna happen overnight. So we gotta push and breathe. I don't know how many mothers are in here who physically birthed children into the world, but if you are a mama like me, I still remember it, even though my son is 27 years old. I'm still trying to work off that baby weight. The mama's in the room, y'all feeling me. And I remind him from time to time all the sacrifices that I made to birth him into the world. But I remember the moment in the labor room, And when the moment was at the peak of pain, the doctor said, push and breathe. And that is my message tonight. That we must push and we must breathe. You sing that darkness that we're feeling, whether it's at the hands of the governor, y'all, Lord, don't even get me started. Wisconsin, y'all special in all kinds of ways. Or whether it's at the hands of Mr. Trump in the White House, but that darkness is not a tomb. It is a womb and rebirth is happening. We will push and we will breathe. We're going to do this thing. Number two. We must protest and we must plan. Now, the protest is good. We need it. But we got to have some folks back there planning. And the plan is to win office. Because progressives, it's not enough to have the best ideas. We got to win the power back. And the way that we win the power back is by supporting progressive candidates who mean what they say and will do what they say when they get the people's power. We got to win these offices. And we can't jump over 2017 to get to 2018. Now, 2018 is important, but the people who are running for school board, for city council, for state legislature, for governor, all of that stuff is important right now. People running for Congress, all of those seats are important. There's not one seat more important than the next. So we can't jump. There is no such thing as an off-year election. In a representative democracy, we don't get off. You got to vote. You got to be engaged. And voting is just one part of the process. You have to be engaged like you are right now. We got to be on and popping every single election cycle. And it is the buildup, the buildup, the buildup to the next and the next and the next. You know, there's an African proverb that says that one must never build their shield on the battlefield. It's shield building time right now. So we're building the shield for the local elections so that in 2018 we're ready. We build another shield in 2018 so that we're ready for 2019. And then 2020 is coming faster than we know it. And we must be ready. And that is why we need progressives running and winning all across this country. So we must protest, but we must also plan. And lastly, family, we must persevere. Because perseverance is the name of the game. This is a generational proposition. And I believe that every generation is charged, or every generation has a responsibility to make this world a better place for the next. And that is our assignment right here and right now. And I don't want you to get weary. Because there are many hard fights ahead of us. Many people in this room, you know it. Folks who are running for office right now, you know it. But you don't have to have a fancy title. You don't have to have even ran for office. We need people who are willing to give of their time, their treasure, and their talent for causes that are bigger than themselves. And speaking of that, we got to pass the hat tonight. Now, we got to help this event. And the Progressive Magazine, we need your help. We need your time, your treasure, and your talent, but we asking for a little bit of treasure tonight. Now, we need some treasure. Now, money can't buy you love, but it's sure enough get you a whole bunch of likes, and we need some likes here tonight. And I'm hoping that you will be willing to donate to this cause. But this is a generational proposition, so I don't want you to get weary. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, back to my story. And so I want to testify as I close this thing out to let you know why I fight so hard. And if there are millennials in the room, and I know that there are, they're millennials, they're boomers, the millennials are in the house. If we got any Gen Xers in the house, shout it out. We got boomers in the house, shout it out. It's all of us together. It is a generational proposition that we are together. The young folks and the seasoned folks. Now, young people don't sleep on the seasoned folks. Everything tastes a little better with some seasoning. Can I get amen from my boomers in the house? But I do want to just share a portion of my story because I want you to know why I fight so hard. I'm the oldest of seven children, and I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. And my grandparents were middle class. My grandparents were born in 1913. They were middle class, hardworking folks. My mother was an only child. And her and my father, they got married very young. And their marriage just didn't work out. So I grew up the majority of my life in a single parent household. So my mother had seven children. I'm the oldest of those seven children, and life was hard. She could have grown up to be anything that she wanted to be. Remember, I said she was an only child and she grew up in a middle class family. But how many of us know that everybody doesn't run the race at the same pace? That sometimes we fall short. When I was a sophomore at Cuyahoga Community College, I got some really bad news that my mother was in the hospital. And back in the dark ages for the millennial generation, there was no texting. It was just a note on the refrigerator door. And this note directed my husband and I to go to the hospital because my mother was there. And I didn't think anything of it because my mother had a history of high blood pressure. And little did I know that that moment was going to be a defining moment for me and my six siblings. When I got to the hospital, my husband and I, all of my siblings were already there. And the second oldest child is my brother. My brother is 6'5" tall. And I had not seen him cry since he was a little boy. That room was heavy. All of my siblings were crying. And the doctor came in the room and she said, "Family, I hate to inform you, but your mother is in a coma." My heart skipped a couple of beats, and I said to the doctor, "I want to go see the woman who nurtured me, the woman who was not perfect, but she sacrificed so much for her seven children." When I got to that room, sisters and brothers, I wasn't prepared. Because when I looked upon my mother's face, her eyes were rolled to the back of her head, and her tongue was hanging out of the left side of her mouth. I looked at her clothing as they were sitting over in the room in the corner, and I analyzed her clothing. Her clothing had been cut from her body because the paramedics were trying to save my mother's life. The doctor told us a week or so later, she said to me as the oldest, she said, "Nina, you're going to have to make a decision because your mother is not coming out of that coma, and the only thing that is keeping her alive is the machine by her bed. We can't keep her hooked up here forever. And so you have to make the decision about when to pull the plug." I was 22 years old. My baby sister was 12, and there's seven of us. I was a sophomore at a community college trying to become a cycle breaker. And the hardest decision I've ever had to make in my life to this point was to pull the plug on my 42-year-young mother. And her life reminded me of a poem that Langston Hughes wrote that asked the question, "What happens to a dream deferred?" Sisters and brothers, not only did my mother die at the age of 42 years old, she died with her dreams deferred. She died on the system of welfare. She died without a life insurance policy. She died without any money in the bank. Seven children. Oldest is 22, the youngest is 12, and I'm at a community college. I'm married and I have a son, and I'm trying to become a cycle breaker. Because I wanted to break the cycle of poverty, the cycle of undereducation in my family's line. So that moment for me transformed my life, and every degree that I earned, from graduating from that community college to matriculating to a four-year university, getting several degrees, every single degree I took in my mother's name. And even though she never lived to see her oldest daughter do some pretty incredible things, I know that she is in heaven saying, "You go, girl, you keep fighting for the less fortunate, you keep fighting for men and women and children like me." So, what I was gonna say to the millennials, and they're gonna understand when I say this, when I go ham, it is because I care about the less fortunate in this country. And I understand from experience what it is like to struggle and to have people in the elected ministry that does not, that when they don't get that, they don't understand that, when they're not willing to sacrifice for the greater good of humanity, they got to be called out. And in some cases, replaced. So I make no apology for believing that Medicare for All is the way to go. I make no apology for believing that we need to make investments in this country, in our infrastructure, and our people. I make no apology for standing strong for what I believe in. And you progressives in this audience should make no apologies either, because we are on the right track and we will continue to fight. We must never relent. We must not cede any territory, and we must never ever get weary in well-doing, because for every move that you make, you're standing up for somebody else who cannot stand up. For every move that you make, you are doing the right thing for ourselves and for generations yet unborn. And so I wanted you to hear a little bit about my story, because people only get to see me on TV and you hear these sound bites, but a sister feels and I think deep. And yes, I'm mad as hell about a whole lot of stuff. Yes, I am an angry black woman with a purpose. And if you're not angry, something is wrong. We all should be mad as hell, but we gonna do something about it. We ain't gonna take it no more, but we gonna do something about it. We will push and breathe. We will protest and plan, and we will persevere. Titles are good, sisters and brothers, but purpose is better. We need more people with purpose. And those folks who have titles, a willingness to sacrifice something that is greater than themselves. So progressives, let's get out there. Let's do the damn thing. Let's continue to change this country and thereby changing the world. We will be victorious. God bless you.